Well, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
I don't know if you heard my admissions or admonitions here earlier, but I'll be calling your case here in a second. But just remember that we are live streaming today. And so to the extent that there's any confidential or private information, please keep that in mind during the course of your remarks. The next matter is Kelly versus Kelly, number 20-0084. Please approach. Whenever you're ready, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mark Steele, and I represent the appellant, Gary Kelly. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Gary has filed this appeal regarding a final decree of dissolution that was amended by some non-pro-tunk orders by the District Court of Saunders County, Nebraska. His assignment of errors can basically be broken down into four categories. One, regarding the appeal of the court's parenting plan that was developed between Gary and his three minor children. Two, a number of financial support matters for the minor children as the non-custodial parent beyond child support, such as ordered reimbursable expenses, the tax dependency allocation that was done by the court, and the payment of private school tuition costs. Mr. Kelly also is appealing the property division in the sense that the court divided the marital property and ordered a property equalization payment. It is Gary's position that that property equalization was an error in that it included the marital residence that was sold prior to the trial, and it was included as an asset to be divided, although the sale had already occurred and proceeds had been divided between the parties. And then finally, Mr. Gary is appealing the financial matters related to payments to his ex-spouse Kirsten for alimony and a reimbursement of attorney's fees. So those are kind of the issues that we raise on appeal. I have set forth in my brief a pretty extensive statement of the facts with regard to the parenting issues for the minor children. Gary is not contesting or filed an appeal regarding the custody situation with regard to the children. His appeal is regard to the parenting plan that was developed for him. The evidence, and Gary would concede that there was evidence at the trial of domestic abuse in the home against his ex-wife Kirsten, and there were allegations of abuse, verbal and some physical, against the minor children. I understand that the court heard the testimony of the parties, weighed their credibility, and made a determination, but Gary feels that it was an error for the court, in a weighing and balancing of the best interests of the children, not to consider the positive aspects of Gary's parenting relationship with his minor children. And also that from the date of the separation until the date of the trial, Gary had undertaken some extensive rehabilitative treatment.
Can you clarify for me? I think my reading of your arguments and understanding is that you're not contesting so much that there is a transitional parenting schedule, but that there's such a long duration, I guess, in each phase of the parenting plan, and that you want to see more flexibility in terms of the movement from one phase to another. Is that a correct characterization?
Yes, Your Honor. That is the point, that the parenting plan that was in place had for at least minimum durational periods, and also did not have any ability for Gary to participate and control some of the aspects of setting up the therapy for the children and setting up the supervised visitation. It was also a definitive period without taking into account what progress was made between Gary and the children and the relationship that was in place.
So in essence, you're wanting the therapist and Gary to have a little bit more control between the two of them as to maybe advancing from one phase to another sooner than the 6 months designated?
That is correct, and that it has a definitive term rather than if there has not been any issue or concern or the therapist is ready to move on, they have those definitive periods.
But can the trial court do that given our current precedent that doesn't allow the court to delegate authority regarding parenting schedules in that manner?
Well, the trial court comes up with a parenting plan that takes the best interest of the children and protects and fosters the relationship with the non-custodial parent primarily because the custodial parent has the day-to-day matters. And so to the extent that it is trying to impose restrictions that are beyond the control of the non-custodial parent, we would submit that is error.
Would you take the position, could the court craft an order that says visitation shall begin upon the recommendation of the therapist? Supervised visitation shall begin upon the recommendation of the therapist? Or does the court have to be directly involved in making that final decision as to going from one step to another?
Well, the point is that this decree doesn't have the ability for the court to do that. It allows basically for a nebula period of having parenting times for a definitive period without any back reporting to the court or supervision. It doesn't set specific parameters that have to be met.
It does, doesn't it? At least not necessarily with regard to phase one, but with the other phases that set forth the 6 month limitations, it says so long as there's no safety issues or something to that effect. So to the extent that there are safety issues as determined by a therapist, if Gary disputed that, then you'd go before the court for resolution of that, wouldn't you?
Well, that could be, but that would be my point, that it is the parenting plan does not specify what those terms and conditions are. What does, what you indicated of unsafeness mean? What would be something that would cause that parenting to be stopped? And the parenting plan needs to be specific in terms of what the parties need to carry out. And so we feel that that parenting plan was excessive and unreasonable in the sense that it does not specify what Gary needs to do. And in addition, all of the rehabilitative steps and things that Gary has done are not even considered or weighed into this parenting time. So,
do you know that for certain though? I mean, the language at least as to phase two and phase three starts off by saying at the recommendation of the therapist, the visitation shall move to the next level. And then at the very end, it says it shall move after 6 months, as long as it's safe. So is that 6 months, the maximum period of time, such that if the therapist would recommend it sooner, then movement could occur sooner?
I would read the decree that the parenting plan says that it has to be a definitive term. On that, and that's the way I guess I was reading that parenting plan. Okay. So the other issues that Gary has raised that I want to get to briefly is in regard to the financial support for the children. The court did order child support for the minor children under the Nebraska Child Support Guidelines, but in addition to that, the court ordered a number of other financial obligations that Gary would pay for extracurricular activities, clothing, haircuts, shoes, coats, hats, and other items that are normal and customary expenses for the children. The child support guidelines are set up in the sense that they provide what a non-custodial parent should pay based on the income of the parties for the reasonable expenses for the children. And so he is paying a child support obligation, and then in addition is ordered to pay 70% or 50% of other expenses that are fairly general and should be considered as part of the child support for the minor children. The guidelines—
But Mr. Steele, how do you get around Coniglia versus Coniglia, where the Supreme Court specifically said that 42-364.17 provides for extracurricular education and other extraordinary expenses of the child and calculation of child support obligations? So in Coniglia, they determined those are other categories that can be ordered in addition to. Now, it doesn't say anything about clothing there, right? But it does say extracurricular and education.
Right, and that, but the decree includes things beyond just the words extracurricular activities, whatever they might be. Now, there is a caveat that says as agreed to between the parties, and so that provides that. But the clothing, haircuts, and shoes, and other items are not something that would respectfully be part of the order for support. And in addition, then, weighing and balancing of the situation of the parties with the support and the availability coming in of that. And so we think that that was an error by the court. Also, the tax dependency exemptions. Mr. Kelly is Gary is providing financial support and child support and other obligations for the children, but yet is not able to be awarded any or allocated any of the tax dependency exemptions for the minor children, and we think that that was an error also. I see I'm running out of
that
time.
That is, that's the end of your time, so okay. If you just wrap up your remarks.
Okay, well, I would just want to say, and then finally on the property equalization payment that was there, the spreadsheet and the evidence that was in place had a listing of the assets and liabilities, and the exhibit 11 that was offered included the value of the marital residence, which the evidence shows was sold prior to trial and divided, and that was referred to in my brief.
Okay.
I'll reserve my
Thank you very much. Counsel, if you would please break.
May it please the court, my name is John Soule, and I represent the appellee, Kirsten Kelly, in this divorce matter. I don't have a whole lot to add that isn't already in my brief, so I'll be just responding to a few of the questions that the court had asked with respect to Mr. Steele's argument and his last notation. The property was sold after the complaint for dissolution of marriage was filed, and the realtor then divided the proceeds. That doesn't mean, however, you don't consider that a marital asset that needed to be considered as to how it was divided. The only area that I think we actually disagreed when you compare the spreadsheets or the property statements that were required to be filed really revolved around indebtedness. I think there was a pontoon boat, a Pacifica automobile that were repossessed. I think Gary turned them back and he listed the indebtedness. I think the indebtedness on the Pacifica was $17,000. The only problem I
Mr. Soule?
Yes.
Mr. Soule, so the court essentially adopted the spreadsheet that you submitted as Exhibit 11.
Yes.
Would you agree? Yes. And it does appear that in adopting that spreadsheet and using the numbers provided on it, it concluded that the $15,841 was the equalization amount. But on that Exhibit 11, it shows each party getting $22,791,000 in equity from the house, and then it has credits for your client related to the child support and outstanding alimony. Isn't it true that at the time of closing, when we look at the settlement statement in Exhibit 15, that those amounts were deducted at that time? So in other words, the total amount of equity remaining net proceeds was roughly $29,000, right? And after all the other costs were taken out, according to the settlement statement.
That could
so Mr. Kelly's share would have been about $14,000-something. And his, instead of him receiving any, it went to pay off his outstanding obligations. That's reflected in the settlement document.
That is correct.
And then presumably the other $14,000-whatever went into escrow, which should have then gone to your client. And the record doesn't show us whether it did go to her or not, but presumably it would have gone to her. Would that be correct?
That is my recollection. I actually didn't participate in the closing, nor did Mr. Steele, to the best of my knowledge.
So if it's true that those outstanding obligations were addressed by Mr. Kelly's share of the equity being applied to his outstanding support obligations, those credits should not appear on the property statement, or on your property statement then, exhibit number 11. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
No. Judge, if you take the position that the divorce didn't happen and the only asset was the sale of the real property, you can compute who would have gotten what from the sale of the property. Then if you now add back in the divorce and say, well, wait a minute, there's a lien against the property for $10,000, I think it was about $10,000 for back support and or temporary alimony. Now we throw that in there. But that was none of an amount that should have been ported over to Kirsten's side of the balance. Because if it is, if that's split equally, then what she's doing is she's paying for her own temporary alimony, and the Mr. Kelly's portion of the temporary child support, which would be patently unfair.
But where did the $22,791 of equity, where did that come from? It's in your client's column, it's in Mr. Kelly's column, and I'm not seeing on the closing statement where there was, that means $45,000 worth of equity. I'm not seeing that on the closing statement. How do we reconcile those differences?
Well, I would assume that there wasn't a true $45,000 because some of it was taken to pay off mortgage and or closing costs and or the temporary support issues. Again, I wasn't present at the closing, but all we tried to do in the spreadsheet is to show what would have happened but for the divorce, when there is a lien, but the lien isn't really due to one party.
All right,
thank you. That was the attempt, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and the big issue on the division of the property was the association of the debt, which has not yet been established. I think when you have a repossession, a UCC claim, the UCC claim holder has to send out the typical letter saying, hey, your asset will be sold in such and such a date. You can attend if you so desire. And once it is sold, then you have a deficiency judgment. Then you actually have an indebtedness. Before then, you don't have a debt. You have a possibility of a debt. We didn't think it was fair to give him that possibility of the debt without the record reflecting that the debt actually exists.
But the closing occurred well before the trial.
I was talking about the sale of the repo of the Pacifica and the pontoon boat, which are specifically set forth, I think, in the appellant's brief, in his spreadsheet that is there.
But those items are listed on your Exhibit 11, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Okay, thank
you. But they differ from the property statement the appellant offered and that we offered in that the indebtedness was not necessarily listed as an indebtedness that had truly taken place at this point in time. We don't believe.
Thank you.
Okay. So the only other thing that I'm just going to briefly get to is I believe they also challenged the amount of the alimony, saying that it doesn't match the statutory guidelines. It actually does. When you look at the interference of Ms. Kelly's career, she is the one that still has to take care of the children. And one of the additions that she now has to do, she's the one that has to take the children to and from the counseling sessions, which the judge built in to get Mr. Kelly back his parenting time. That is an imposition. She's the one that goes from Wahoo, I believe it's to Omaha. I don't know that the record actually reflects who the counselor is. But that's where we're at with that. She's continuing to bear the brunt of the medical transportation and the care of the minor children at additional cost to her. When she originally married Gary. She left, I think, an $89,000 a year. I think now, at the time of the divorce, she had recouped maybe two-thirds of that, but now she's starting at the bottom of the pile, not at the level that she was prior to the date of the marriage. And the reason
Mr.
She,
Stoll?
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind just transitioning over to the phased parenting schedule for a minute.
Sure.
Do you see any problem with phase one, which was left to the discretion of each child's therapist in terms of when to move to phase two? Isn't that contradictory to our precedent, Supreme Court precedent, that, you know, you can't leave such decisions to a counselor or therapist?
Judge, I think it goes back further than just that. What I would have liked to have seen is for a brief hearing, if either of the parties disagrees with the therapist's statement, then it's set for hearing on such and such a date, so it can be an airing of that. I mean, you can go back decades when the court ruled that, you know, attorney guardians ad litem, we can't make the decision for the court. Well, it's still the same for a therapist. Not that they may not be in a little better position to do that, but it's still not their job. It's always the job of the court to make that decision. So is it
problematic in this current parenting plan then that the court left that open for a therapist alone to make that decision?
Well, it might be, but it really hasn't been an issue. See, it isn't like that there is a definitive time period and we cannot bring that back before the court. I think any time that there is a substantial change in circumstances or the best interest of the minor child applies, we can come back to the court and say, hey, the therapist says the kids are being harmed by not seeing dad, and we need to include dad. I think as long as the parties are fully abiding by those terms, and of course, the cute little thing that has happened since then is, of course, we got Corona. So we go from in-person visits or family therapy to the web type thing, which for these types of hearings, I think were great. I hope that this continues. But for the face-to-face counseling of minor children, I think you almost still need that to go on. And the court really doesn't have the time, like, you'll see a juvenile court, for example, micromanage. I would hate to see the district court put in the position of micromanaging. Maybe require reports, but even that is more like juvenile court, not a district court's job.
I totally understand what you're saying. We're going to have to deal with the precedent that's out there regarding unlawful delegation of authority.
The nice thing is I'm out of time, and that ain't my problem. So good luck with
Thank
that.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the matter is now submitted. Thank you both. I don't think there was. I think.
No time? Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.